we need a new open for it, because now we have 75 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
You're right. Do you have any ideas for what you would want to say? Do we have a catchphrase?
Do we have a catchphrase? I don't know. Catchphrase? Don't quit.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Quinn Kesnick, my in-season co-host, for whom, like all of us, the season was cut too short. And Quinn, it's been a couple months since we heard from you on the podcast. You've continued to produce weekly column on Inside Lacrosse, and most recently talked about the romance and absence, the heart growing fonder absence of the Vail Lacrosse Shootout. You had an opportunity to visit that wondrous place in Colorado. How are you holding up as the spring quarantine has shifted into summertime?
Roller coaster. You know, the last game that I worked was March 10th. The ups and downs of spring, Memorial Day. I think after Memorial Day, there was a little bit of peace and settling, knowing that there wasn't anything we were missing until now. You know, July 4th recently has meant that I go out to Denver for the World Series of Youth Lacrosse. And I always tie in a vacation of Vail for a week with my family. So being out in Vail sparked some memories. I thought it was an interesting topic to write about for a lot of the current players. I'm not sure they understand what Vail was back in the 80s, mainly the 90s, you know, the mid 90s, especially those rosters were so loaded. So I thought that was a fun topic. And now we'll turn things forward because things are ramping up, and we'll see with this reopening, whether it's worked in some states and hasn't in others, and what impact that has on the summer lacrosse, both for the youngsters and for the pros.
There's a lot of news looking forward, but before we do that, just wanted to take a quick look back, and with the benefit of time and distance, what stands out to you as the biggest story that the lacrosse world has faced over the last 4 months?
Well, just the cancellation of the season, the adjustment of personnel in terms of the Ivy League and people being forced to leave their campuses and finish up their careers elsewhere. Now with the uncertainty of the 2021 season and, you know, some of the smaller college football programs canceling or postponing their season, what's the financial impact to athletic departments and what's next spring going to look like? You know, I worry. I stress, I freak out about it, and I try to stay as sane as I can, but it's not normal, and you know, there's some serious concerns about the 2021 season.
We'll get to all of that, but first, I know that the issues of racial justice and racial diversity within the sport of lacrosse struck a chord with you. In the wake of all the protests around George Floyd's death and subsequent to, and you wrote a piece for InsideLacrosse.com, and obviously on this podcast, there have been a number of conversations surrounding the issue. I understand that you had an opportunity to join a call with your ESPN colleagues in which this was discussed, and it seemed in our communication like it was very powerful. How have you continued to process this topic over the course of the last several weeks?
Well, it was an incredibly powerful call to hear men like Mark Jones and Rod Gilmore, who I worked with, Maria Taylor, and others all talk about systemic racism that they've faced in their careers, both as athletes, as broadcasters, and as family people. You know, I worked with Mark Jones and Rod Gilmore, and I can tell you a story. It was a morning, Friday morning, we're at Auburn, early in September. I go for a run, it's about 7:30. Down this beautiful path into the state park. It's about 4 miles. I come back. Mark Jones is, he's, you know, 15, 20 minutes behind me. So I say, hey, run down this path. You'll get to the state park, do a loop. You'll go around the lake. Well, as I had entered the state park, the state trooper just waved to me. Mark got to the state park gate, and they didn't let him in. And I remember coming back to the hotel for breakfast before our meetings at Auburn, and just the subtle racism that I just witnessed, and working with those two gentlemen and Adam Amin for so many years, you know, I saw it. I saw it in hotels. I saw it in restaurants with our service. I saw it in airports. And, you know, I had never really quite noticed it until living with those guys for so long. And so that has really struck a chord with what they deal with on a daily basis. In terms of lacrosse, my biggest issues are the systemic racism that goes along with the club-based growth of the game. You know, everything's financially connected. When I was young, I was lucky enough to play for a rec program in our town that cost $25 and gave you the equipment. There were no financial barriers for people. And so if you're a good athlete, there was a chance you tried lacrosse. And unfortunately, right now with the club system, I think we are systemically racist, and we are asking families to invest far too much money and time at an early age, and that has steered the game to the higher income echelons, and that's a long-term negative.
So you and I have talked about that particular issue at length, and I look at the issues of racial diversity in many different subsections and categories when it comes to lacrosse, and I think there are a lot that don't get talked about frequently enough, and I've spoken about them recently, such as the perception among people of color as to whether or not the game is welcoming and whether the game is for them, and then the treatment that folks receive when they're, you know, racial and ethnic minorities on lacrosse teams. I think those are really substantial issues, and I think that they are in some ways separate from what you just addressed, which is the material physical access to the opportunity to play, whether it's equipment or whether it's just finding a team with a coach and an opponent to play, a practice to go to. And while I agree with your point in many respects, I think that it's important to keep in mind some of the nuanced benefits, because ultimately I think that there is a very strong geographic component to the point that you just made, which is that, you know, essentially from 1950 to 1980, 1985, maybe 1990, you know, that was the pinnacle of parks and rec spending in, you know, different communities all across the country. And there's been a 30-year decline in government and other types of initiatives, ability to spend, whether, you know, it was PAL in some parts of the country or CYO in other parts of the country, which obviously is a function of a private system in and of itself. And the point is that youth sports have suffered all across the board. Lacrosse is no outlier. But because in most of these communities, lacrosse is a very recently arrived sport, it's very much at the bottom of the totem pole in terms of resource allocation, specifically when it comes to just consider how many Little League baseball fields there are all across the country relative to how many parks and rec departments have ever purchased lacrosse helmets. And so my experience was not being able to play lacrosse until I was a freshman in high school because there was no youth lacrosse in Cleveland, Ohio when I was growing up. And when it did arrive, it was basically a club-based option. And that has become even more prevalent in parts of the country where lacrosse has arrived even more recently than it did in Cleveland. And so my point of view on it is, again, a little bit more nuanced. I certainly agree with your point, particularly in parts of the country where there were established rec programs and those have suffered by virtue of club's emergence. But in terms of whether the sport was ever going to get off the ground in a tremendous part of the country, there is the function of the private market was going to have to fill that because the public market never was going to. And so I think that the hope that I have is the creation of a middle layer or a lower layer of club lacrosse that represents essentially what you see in other sports, which is more local and regional play. Because a lot of the hidden costs in playing club lacrosse are less to do with the coach fees, and they're more to do with all the travel that's associated with having to play club lacrosse. And so again, you know, I don't want to get hung up on this for too long, and we're going to come back around to it later in the conversation when we talk about how, you know, basically the recruiting scene is adjusting to this summer. But you know, I feel compelled to make that point because I do think that it's attacked from both angles.
Yeah, Terry, those are valid points and good ones. My main issue lately has been, you know, there seems to be a lot of darts thrown at some of these college programs for lacking diversity. And, you know, I think the bigger issue is the bridge. You know, we've seen City Lacs, Harlem Lacs, Bronx Lacrosse, Charm City. My brother coached there for a number of years. I'm just not seeing a bridge from youth to middle school into high schools. I mean, look at the Baltimore lacrosse scene, Calvert Hall, Chaminade, St. Anthony's. These are programs that have not done anything in terms of trying to ramp up their diversity. And I know I'm attacking them, but those programs have the means to be diverse, and they haven't. And I hope we see a change.
Let's move on to some of the news of the day. One of the things that is relatively late-breaking as we record this on Wednesday afternoon is the threat to the 2020 college football season as Division III conferences like the Centennial appear poised to move to playing football for the spring, and the expectation that that will go up the ladder, so to speak, with the possibility that the Ivy League is soon going to make a similar decision. Again, this is a topic that you and I have spoken about, and we probably share a relative minority opinion. I posted about this earlier in the week on my Twitter. I asked what percentage of people thought that if football is played in the spring, it would be good or bad for lacrosse, and the overwhelming majority thought that it would be bad. What's your opinion on that particular issue?
I disagree with that opinion. That's a funny thing. I think it could be a positive. You're going to get situations that Power Five schools potentially where you play double headers at North Carolina, Ohio State, and Michigan. And we've seen from some of those events in the past what a great success it is. And it's an ability now for lacrosse, if football is slotted in the spring and lacrosse still exists, it's an ability to get more new faces, new eyes on the game of lacrosse, to couple them on campus, whether it's direct double headers in the same stadium, whether it's later or earlier that day. And it's you know, if we're in a good place virus-wise, it is an opportunity for lacrosse to create new fans. And I think television-wise, it's the same. Obviously, the prime slots will be taken, but there's more people watching TV on a Friday, Saturday, let's say. And, you know, if college lacrosse is mobile and agile and works in concert with football, I think they can benefit.
So one of the very important underlying elements of that is the financial impact that any type of adjustment to the football season and potentially to the basketball season and certainly the basketball tournament, which we saw occur in 2020, has for the world of college athletics. And so far, there have only been a handful of lacrosse teams that have been casualties to the situation. And I think that even those close to these programs and some of the public statements around the program have had wavering or differing opinions on the role that the pandemic and the subsequent financial fallout meant to the cancellation of the program. But certainly within men's lacrosse, the cancellation of the Furman men's team, which was, I believe, their first season they played was in 2014, coached by Richie Mead. Part of the wave of development in the southeast of the United States in terms of new Division I programs being created, and a member of the Southern Conference. It was an abrupt decision and one that was a difficult pill to swallow, particularly because there were so many players on that roster. So it just affected disproportionately a larger number of people, and certainly, you know, 25 or so commits in the classes of 2020 and 21. It was part of a overall restructure within the athletic department that included the cancellation of the baseball program as well. So far, it appears that Furman is an outlier. What is your thought and reaction relative to that particular issue?
Well, if football is impacted, the economic cascade is going to hit lacrosse hard. And I think football is already going to be impacted, whether you play in front of empty stadiums, TV revenue. I just don't think athletic departments are going to have the same amount of money. I don't think that's a stretch. That's a, you know, maybe one of the dumbest things I've ever said that's true. Now, schools like Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, the ACC, they're going to lose a lot of operating cash. Maryland, what do you do then? Well, I think the lacrosse program is going to be under the gun financially. I think fall lacrosse is unlikely. I think you're going to see pay cuts, furloughs. You're going to see roster sizes shrinking at a time that they're bloated and gigantic because of last year's pandemic. And I think across the board, teams are going to be asked to spend less money. And so that means fewer flights, less overnight stays in hotels. You're going to see an adjustment of the schedule. You're going to see an adjustment of how many guys are on the squad, how many guys can suit up. I think it has tremendous ramifications to the 21 and 22 seasons.
Why do you see rosters getting smaller? You know, in a time when tuition dollars are going to be more important at pretty much every university than they've ever been?
Because it costs money to feed, it costs money to bus, it costs money to fly, it costs money to hotel, it costs money to tape ankles. The whole thing costs money. If you're moving a ship of 65 guys, and some rosters right now, honestly, are at 65 guys, as opposed to 45, and then have a day roster of 32, we can't be taking two buses. We can't be buying those kind of tickets on planes for guys to sit on the bench. And so I see conferences at some point potentially saying, hey, bring 32 to the game. They're all eligible to play. And so you're going to have an adjustment in the size and scope of everything.
But my point of view on that is that if it costs an athletic department, say, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to have a roster, have a player on a roster over the course of the season, and they're paying $50,000 to go to school, what school would turn down the $40,000 delta?
No, you're on the roster. You're just not getting on the bus to go up to Drexel.
Got it. That'll be an interesting development for sure. And I'm curious to see how different programs attack that at each level. It's, you know, you, to your point, conference to conference, where you have, you know, much more similarity across departments, and then certainly by division, where the role that rosters play in enrollment and in male enrollment manifests differently between Division I versus Division II versus Division III.
Yes, and I mean you could see reduction in the third assistant coach, and you know, again, scheduling is the main. Why would I want to fly somewhere when I can have UMBC play Maryland, when I can have Navy play Maryland, when I can have Towson play Maryland? Bus, daily bus trips, no hotel, especially if the virus is still active.
So moving along, one of the big stories in lacrosse since the season was canceled was Johns Hopkins' separation from Dave Petromala, subsequently replacing him with Cornell head coach Peter Milliman, and then Milliman filling out his staff with John Grant Jr. and Jamison Kester. Jr., obviously one of the best players in the history of the sport. Kester, an alum and a rising star in the assistant coaching ranks, having come over from UMBC. In addition to that, there were some subsequent roster changes in terms of bringing in a couple transfers, notably Jared Fernandez, a long stick middie from Syracuse, as well as some commitments, a couple that came over from Cornell, a couple of Hopkins commits that are no longer going to be attending Homewood. What's your point of view on your alma mater and the way that things have unfolded over the course of the last couple months?
I think they're a non-top 20 team until I see otherwise. Yeah, I like the freshman class a lot, but remember the last time I called a game, they were losing to Mount St. Mary's and should have lost that game had Mount St. Mary's managed, okay? They're a non-top 20 team until they show me otherwise. Again, is the freshman class significant? Fernandez, I don't see as a strong blip on the radar. New coaching staff, I like. They'll have a new attitude. I think that'll work, but at the end of the day, there's very little defensive talent and there's very little midfield talent.
When you look to the other roster moves, you mentioned this with the Ivy League essentially imposing that most programs cannot have their players return for an additional year of eligibility. You saw a significant amount of transfers out, most notably Michael Sowers heading to Duke. Jackson Morrill heading to Denver, Lucas Kotler joining him as well. What were some of the transfers that caught your eye, and how do you feel like that's going to manifest itself next year?
I haven't really been following them as intently as I probably should have. I'm kind of waiting for the dust to clear because I think you could potentially see some more movement even in the fall or as late as next January. But I will tell you this. Duke is loaded. They're stacked. Okay, Syracuse is loaded. They are stacked. I would put those two teams 1-2 with some separation. I think Notre Dame has made themselves a better team with Gallagher and Thornton from Penn. And I think Virginia is going to be much better next year than they were last year. They lose Krause, yes, but they pick up a lot of parts. We'll see what happens with the gentleman playing at Villanova football, Dox Akin. So those teams, to me, are on the radar. I think Denver will be better as well. And I mean, you could say right now Duke won't go undefeated because John Donowski's doesn't do that, but they're going to be almost untouchable.
As the kids call it, Duke looks to be a wagon. But your point is well taken with respect to Dox Akin and his plan to play football at Villanova and how that potentially would be affected by any change to the football season. And it's worth noting that we are under the impression that Jared Bernhardt, who, in addition to being one of Maryland's best attackmen for the last three seasons, also was a tremendous option quarterback in high school and the son of a really successful college and professional football coach, had made the decision to attend Ferris State, a D2 powerhouse that runs the option, and I believe had three quarterbacks that put up significant numbers last year. I believe one, maybe two of which were seniors. Bernhard had intended to play the next football season there, and so it's worth monitoring how that evolves and what it means for the prospects of, you know, potentially being a part of the Terps roster again in the future.
You know, it's fascinating stuff, and again, the parts are still moving. You know, some the main characters have settled in, but we could see some more shifting prior to the fall or after the fall in January, and you know, again, people are going to be tempted to take redshirt years if it's not a full season in 2021.
So to put a bow on discussion around the college lacrosse season, 2 weeks ago, your weekly column featured interviews with six D1 players, one of whom also falls into that football lacrosse conversation, JT Giles Harris, the first-team All-American defenseman from Duke, who, my understanding is, has essentially put his prospect of playing football on hold for the time being, realizing that his point of emphasis is playing for Duke again in the 2021 season. But you talked to a couple other guys like Chris Gray from North Carolina, Chase Erlin from Cornell. And you touched on a lot of different topics, really around the idea of finding sanity. That was the headline to the piece. What are some of the enduring thoughts or comments that these folks shared with you in your communication?
I thought it was fascinating. I would really encourage fans and players, parents and players alike, to read it, because, you know, our mental health, this is attacking, this pandemic is attacking our mental health. And I felt that the player needed to be heard from. You know, what's the journey been like for them? And there's a shared experience. There's a shared camaraderie of disappointment, of fear, of anxiety, that I thought after reading and working on that article, I really felt better. You know, for Chris Gray to go walk his dog every morning for 30 minutes to find sanity, I thought was interesting. For Chase Erlin, the goalie at Cornell, to go fishing. For, you know, JT Giles Harris to spend some extra time reading about racial problems, about sexual assault, about intergalactic space, you know, how each of these athletes has learned to cope, has learned to find the new routine. And I think that's so important, you know, how these guys are so dialed in while they're in school, Terry. Their academics, their athletics, their social activities, their calendars are full, and that's easy. You go from event to event to event to event, but all of a sudden you're at home living in the basement and your parents are on your case. They're upstairs. You got nothing to do other than go to school online. You've lost your mojo in terms of working out. So I thought it was fascinating to reach out and to hear from these guys firsthand how they've adapted, how they've found their fire again, and how they've really grown as people. And I really got to thank them for their honest feedback, because it hasn't been easy, and they all admit bottoming out, as maybe you did, because I know I did. I mean, when you're exhausted for doing nothing, you know you got problems. So I hope everyone who's listening to this is okay mentally, because I think that's the long-term challenge for these kids.
It's a really interesting point, because it does kind of juxtapose what I was really intrigued by Ryan Tarafenko, the DMITI at Ohio State's comments were around, which was that immediate bottoming out, but then the reinvigoration a couple weeks later when it became clear that he was going to have the opportunity to come back, and then the realization that the rut that he had fallen into, staying up late, sleeping in late, and eating poorly, well, if he wanted to be productive, he needed to get out of that rut, and he needed to reassert himself in terms of his physical development and his lacrosse skills. And so when we solicited photos, the one that he provided was of him playing wall ball. And so the other side of maintaining health is, and it's been fascinating for me, this is a nice segue into talking about the summer recruiting event scene, because I've talked to a lot of parents who, like, to put the point most acutely, one was his son plays in New York State, and he said that he was really appreciative of the New York State High School Athletic Association postponing the announcement of the cancellation of the season much later than other states had, where they were much quicker to announce, because it gave them hope. It gave them a reason to hold on, a reason to continue to stay focused and train and whatever else. And I also know that there's another side of that pendulum where, you know, I heard of one overuse injury from, you know, a highly touted player that's going to put him on the shelf for an extended period of time. So the balance of not being obsessive in terms of training, but also not being lazy, and all the negative things that are that result from laziness, and trying to find an appropriate measure of focusing on getting better when you are unable to do all the things that you typically did in order to get better, such as go to the gym, such as play lacrosse with other people. What's your point of view on the healthiest way to have tried to improve over the course of the last couple months?
Well, I mean, I approached it across the boards. So whether it's running, lifting, and I don't do wall ball or stick work or shooting or dodging, but I would if I was a player. That's a segment of your day. You've got to take time for professional development, whether that's reading books, watching interesting movies, or growing, pursuing your hobbies. You know, you go to the hobby store and everything's sold out because everyone was stuck at home doing what they love. And for me, you know, I found sanctity in my garden. I found sanctity in my long runs. I found peace in playing games with my daughter. You know, and now this summer, as the summer has kind of opened things up, I'm finding my spirits are better. There's work on the horizon, which provides me with juice and adrenaline. You know, I thought the interesting thing, Terry, is how much I draw energy and adrenaline from these events that I cover, whether it's the NCAA wrestling finals, whether it's the lacrosse championships or a playoff game. Like, there's something chemically in me that gets off on that stuff. And I wake up Monday and like, you should be exhausted, but you're bouncing off the walls because you got this great chemistry going on in your brain and your body. And this spring we didn't have that. So you kind of had to manufacture that yourself.
It's interesting to me. I felt pretty good about my ability to stay active. I had a realization, over the course of the last couple days, I felt good about the amount of housework that I did, but I really wish, and I should have been inspired by you because you were sending me photos, early in the spring. I fell far behind on, you know, I don't have a yard, right? I live in downtown Baltimore, but I do have potted plants, and they were just collecting weeds up through this weekend when I finally got some actual, worthwhile plants in them, mostly herbs and, some small vegetables. But yeah, I wish I had done that in the actual planting season. That was my lone regret from the way the quarantine has unfolded.
Yeah, it was interesting, Terry, because the players all talked about how valuable the team Zooms were. You know, at a point where you lost your mates, you lost your friends, how that held everybody together. And the coaches, I thought, did a wonderful job across the country keeping these groups together. And I experienced the same thing. You know, at a down moment, John Vassallo, our boss, and John Kettering, and Clark, and Anish, and myself, and others, Chris Cotter, we would do a weekly Zoom, and that was very beneficial because we were sharing stories. We were sharing low points and high points. We were sharing what's not working and what is working. And so there was a commonality there that I felt helped. But being alone in nature, being alone somewhere quiet to really process your thoughts, I think it's essential. And I felt that from what the players conveyed to me.
So I mentioned that obviously there's a lot of news in front of us, and a lot of it is coming down the pipeline very quickly. You mentioned the opportunity to work on the horizon. Are you allowed to talk publicly about that?
Oh yeah, no. Major League Lacrosse is having their season, July 18 through 26th, Navy Marine Corps Stadium. We've got three games right now scheduled on ESPN2 and 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. The rest, the 20 or so, on ESPN Plus, and there may be some upgrades to some of those games. But things will start on Saturday the 18th. Six teams, everybody's playing every day. It's a ton of lacrosse. Sunday, July 19, we're on ESPN2 at 1 and 4, Chesapeake in New York, Denver in Philadelphia. Joe Beninati, myself, Booker Corrigan, and Don Zimmerman are the other team, and we're going to be rotating throughout the week. So I've got to get tested for this virus this week in order to be part of the protocol to work those games. And the preparation starts, you know, just opening up these rosters and trying to build my bios and finally talking lacrosse for them.
And in terms of the way that the summer is going to unfold, obviously, back-to-back between MLL and PLL, it comprises about 20 days of lacrosse, a ton of action to unfold. Aside from the obvious excitement just for the opportunity to work and see the action again, is there anything that you're particularly focused on seeing unfold?
No, I have no expectation level in terms of what these guys are going to look like. They're coming in on short prep. Obviously, everyone's trying to get into shape. It's an excruciating tournament, both PLL and MLL. A lot of lacrosse in a short period of time where an injury and conditioning have huge ramifications. So I'm just eager to get back on TV. You know, one thing that hit me over the pandemic, Terry, and I'll tell you, is so many people were putting old games up, old clips up, and I cringe often when I watch them because, you know, I was so serious. I always sound so serious. And the reality is I'm having fun. But my biggest learning experience of this pandemic is I got to have more fun. I mean, next time I'm on TV, I am having more fun. You will not believe what my hair looks like. That's how much fun we're having. So going forward, I will tell you this. I may lose my job ultimately because I have too much fun. Because I am committed to being less serious and having more fun, because that's what people want out of sports, and that's what I can give them.
And so the last thing that we'll touch on is around the issue of summer lacrosse. You know, I know it's something that you've got thoughts on. Obviously, it's something that at Inside Lacrosse we're actively working toward. And really the way I've looked at it and communicated this to the rest of our group and tried to move forward is essentially there have been two decisions, right? So it is proactively cancel or continue to adjust on the basis of the most recent information and figure out a solution. And if no solution is available, cancel at that point. And, you know, we are actively working toward and have, you know, all signs that suggest that we're going to effectively be able to host the July session of the Inside Lacrosse Invitational at the DE Turf facility in Frederica, Delaware on July 14th, roughly a week from today. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of different advice and advisement from a lot of different sources on health and safety protocol, and we're working closely with the venue in order to be able to offer that. There have been a lot of local play days that have already occurred. There have been, multi-team events from multiple different locations that have occurred. There have been individual events in different parts of the country that have occurred. So slowly but surely, the return of summer lacrosse is happening. But it is a very, dynamic situation with information that changes literally every day. What is your point of view on, you know, basically summer lacrosse in a season when Division I coaches are not allowed to be on the sideline by virtue of the NCAA's extended dead period, but players not only want to play, they also feel compelled because they've gotten better. They've gotten bigger and they've gotten faster and they've gotten stronger and they want to be able to show their wares and compete.
Yeah, I talked to a tournament director today who felt that, you know, the numbers for these monster giant events are down a third. So instead of having 100 teams, maybe they have 60. There's some restrictions from some states in terms of travel. Anything that's high school based is unlikely to happen. So you're seeing at the NHSLS tournament in Columbia later on in July that high school teams now are going under the club banner because they're allowed to. I'm seeing more regional games where the Crabs in Baltimore are playing another regional team, where the Annapolis Hawks are scheduling just a scrimmage or game with somebody else regionally, a day trip. So I think the day events have a better chance. Again, regionally, where I have to drive, I don't need to stay in a hotel, I don't need to go to an airport. And those that can create those type of events to avoid the lengthy travel, I think have a chance at doing pretty well this summer. They're also very keyed into getting film to college coaches, which is essential. So I think under that, those confines, those rules and restrictions, I think it can be a fairly successful summer for kids.
And certainly that obviously just parlays itself into the cycle of trying to get opportunities to be a part of future college seasons, which brings us all the way back around to what's going to happen to college lacrosse going forward. And I think that, you know, unfortunately we have only a marginally better idea of what that looks like than we did on March 12th when the season was canceled. So we've talked a lot about mental health. We've talked a lot about the need for improvement and growth and focusing on different elements of the game. Is there one last thought or idea that you'd like to leave our listeners with as we, you know, kind of cross the bridge in the middle of summer and turn our attention toward the second half of the season, second half of the summer season, and potentially into the fall?
Well, stay smart, stay disciplined, and stay tough, okay? Going out and making bad decisions is not in the best interest of anybody. It's you, your family, your grandparents, your lacrosse team, the lacrosse event. And I'd also encourage fans to really support the products this summer, the Major Lacrosse Plus and ESPN2 later in July, 18th through 26th, and then the PLL for their 2-week tournament. This is an opportunity for lacrosse to step up. It's an opportunity for lacrosse to get better numbers on TV. It's an opportunity for people to watch this game. So take advantage of it. If you're a lacrosse fan, you got to tune in. If you know somebody in your neighborhood who's having their TV recorded for ratings, get over there and make sure they're watching us.
Well, Quint, as always, appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Can't wait to talk again soon. Have a great summer. We look forward to your broadcasts of the MLL action.
Terry, the garden has been amazing. Pulling peas and green beans out of there on a daily basis. Plus, obviously, lettuce, purple kale, and green onions. We are whistle ready at the Quick Restart podcast. Like that? Whistle ready.